Hello everyone, welcome to our first episode of the new season, a global perspective on European politics. My name is Aga Bayramov, and today our topic is Brazilian elections, the Amazon, and the prospects for the global environmental governance. And I am honored to have Dr. Eric Sesne as our the first guest of the new season. And I would like to introduce and give a short information about Dr. Eric Sesne. He's a postdoctoral fellow at the Center for Global Cooperation Research, Duisburg, Germany, and the Department of Human Geography and Spatial Planning, Utrecht University, Netherlands. So he's doing almost double postdoc degree. With expertise at the intersections of international relations and development studies, he's interested in the geopolitics, governance arrangements, and the ground-level relations configuring the large-scale infrastructures, natural resource extraction, and the sustainability transition in the global south, including the Brazilian foreign policy. Eric is the co-editor of Africa's Global Infrastructures. It is forthcoming, and his work being published in outlets such as African Affairs, Global Society, World Development, and the Extractive Industries and Society. It's a very impressive biography. Eric, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a great pleasure and honor having you with us today.
Happy to be here and looking forward to the conversation.
Yes, thanks again, Eric, for joining us today. I can imagine that you are very busy and you have a very busy schedule traveling as well. So I want to start with the recent elections in Brazil and the developments following up the elections. The Bolsonaro is not anymore in power, or is not anymore ruling the Brazil, and we have a now new leader, let's say, but it also went not very smoothly. Could you briefly reflect on the recent elections and the future of Brazil regarding what could be expected?
Thank you very much for the question, Aga. So before delving into the outcomes of the Brazilian election, I believe it's important to go a little bit back and explain what was at stake. So the ongoing, the latest Brazilian election led to the defeat of Bolsonaro, but by no means to the defeat of Bolsonarismo and everything he represented politically. So to understand first and foremost the rise of Bolsonaro and Bolsonarismo in Brazil, one has to go back to the mid-2010s, where there was a lot of anti-politics and a lot of anti-political sentiments on the heels of a major corruption scandal, which is also controversial because there you had explicit role of some judges that had views against the left in Brazil. But nevertheless, there was major popular discontentment. There was major resentment. So Bolsonaro was an actor that was able to harness this sentiment and those feelings really well. So combined with a kind of conservatism that has always existed in Brazilian society, particularly among the upper middle classes, a lot of the religious groups, Christian religious groups, specifically the evangelicals. So he was elected in 2018. When Lula da Silva, who served two terms as president from 2003 to 2010 and was now elected again for a third mandate. So when Bolsonaro won the elections in 2018, Lula da Silva was in jail on the heels of this corruption investigation. And the Bolsonaro government, as many of our listeners may know, came with a string of radical positionings, especially vis-a-vis the environment, so tied in many ways to a sort of radical right vision on the environment, especially with regards to the Amazon. So the Amazon is a place that should be conquered. The Amazon is a place that should be integrated. The indigenous populations, they should become integrated. So this idea of bringing civilization to the Amazon, including to the traditional populations there. So the election of Lula in many ways represented a return to a sort of more measured environmental politics, the ability of Brazil to engage with environmental programs. So Brazil being seen as a more reliable partner on the global stage.
But you said he was also charged with the corruption. So how did it end? Because apparently Lula is also not very, say, clean person regarding the previous experience. So do we see another level of, let's say, problem? Of course, with Bolsonaro, we ended up with the right wing, and here with Lula, we will end up. We are not going to remove the problems, but it's going to be even, different problems.
So there are many controversies regarding the person of Lula. So as I said, and as you rightly highlighted, so he was convicted on charges of corruption, although corruption, and that was part of the problem in Brazil, corruption is a very vague term that can also be instrumentalized for political purposes. And there are many schools of thought regarding what really happened there. So my personal view, my scholarly view, is that the whole procedure against Lula was strongly manipulated, because Bolsonaro's justice minister, he was the judge who convicted Lula. So his minister, former judge Sergio Moro, he was the one convicting Lula and overseeing the judicial proceedings against Lula. Mm-hmm. So many point at a great degree of bias. So the whole
fightings basically between two competitors.
Yeah, not initially a personal fight as such, but the developments. So they eventually were harnessed, as I said, by Bolsonaro. They led to a strong anti-politics sentiment that provided to be very fruitful for populists like Bolsonaro, who sort of labeled himself as this guy on a crusade against corruption, even though he has been a member of parliament in Brazil for more than 2 decades, and he has been part of a lot of the arrangements, and there's plenty of evidence that he also engaged in sort of small level corruption, sort of overspending money that was supposed to be spent on fuel for his transportation, so on and so forth.
Yeah. And then you mentioned the environmental governance here as well, because we remember that Bolsonaro was against the climate change, energy transition, even open up the Amazon to increase the tension globally as well from different countries. So what would be the policy, do you think, environmental energy policy of the new president? More protecting and more green energy, or would it be the same strategy?
So the election of Lula is seen, especially among progressive circles, as a return of Brazil to global environmental governance. So Bolsonaro, in many ways, as I said, so projected this developmentalist vision for the Amazon in tandem with conservative positions, with evangelical Christian visions for the indigenous populations. He also had strong agribusiness support. So this idea that the Amazon has a surplus of forest, it's essentially an empty land that needs to be developed. And that kind of narrative also had the strong appeal in the Amazon. So myself, I did fieldwork in the Amazon in October, November, so around the time of the Brazilian elections. And I was personally amazed by the strong support that Bolsonaro has in the Amazon region, especially in the large cities and places close to major roads, because he was promising to develop roads in the Amazon, integrate the Amazon to the rest of the country.
But Lula will do the opposite, do you think?
That's also that's also contentious, because as I said, Lula served as president before, so now he's in his third mandate. And his government, as well as the government of Lula's successor, who is also from the Workers' Party, so those governments, they come with a strong legacy also of environmentally questionable development. So there is one major example is the Belo Monte Dam, which is a hydropower dam, and this possessed indigenous populations. Also, the Lula governments, during that time, there were alliances with agribusiness. There were also incentives for big businessmen to engage in farming. So Lula and his government, they come with a track record that, how should I put it, is not the is the not cleanest a, or yeah. certainly
transparent
not the most environmentally correct.
Yeah.
But I mean, now we are in the 2020s, and also when it comes to worldviews, global perceptions, so the environment is much more of a crucial issue, specifically in Europe, right? So when a government or someone wants to engage in trade with Europe, or even a lot of investment funds, right? So they have a whole range of so-called ESG criteria, although that is also controversial.
Could you explain what's that, the definition?
The ESG criteria, so environment, society, and governance. So this idea that corporations should act for the good, they should look after the communities where they are involved, they should ensure that their operations are not harmful. So there is that kind of vision. So that kind of vision is definitely stronger nowadays than before. So the Lula government is aware about it. It's aware about the importance of the Amazon. It's aware of the fact that the Amazon essentially is one of the main lenses through which foreign audiences and foreign governments perceive Brazil. So on that note, there's also an interest, which is also strategic interest, you know, to engage in sustainable projects in the Amazon, to preserve the Amazon, and this vision that the Amazon and its preservation, they represent an asset for Brazil rather than a burden.
Yes, this all sounds still complicated, of course, a little bit better than the previous regime or the previous government. And what are the concrete green energy projects? You said the hydropower, which is also controversial because of its influence to the local population, the nature as well. Hydrogen, maybe green hydrogen these days is a hype. There is a green, gray, blue hydrogen or solar panel. Which one of these options right now Brazil is doing? Trying to pursue, because I'll also come to your recent field trip as well, but just briefly on these green energy options.
Yeah, so before delving more specifically into the current dynamic, it's important also to note that Brazil has long had a clean energy matrix. Mm-hmm. So 80% of all the electricity produced could be regarded as clean because they derive mostly from hydropower. And 40% of all energy matrix, so of all energy sources in Brazil, are regarded as clean as well. Okay. But mostly, as I said, due to hydropower. But clean is also a concept that is very ambiguous and can be contested. As mentioned, the Lula governments, they pushed for major hydropower projects in the Amazon, which come with a sort of a heavy, you know, environmental impact and consequences. So that's a caveat also in order to understand all the implications behind supposedly green sources of energy. Also, Brazil since the oil crisis of the 70s, so the military regime back then, they invested in biofuels.
Yeah.
So a lot of the fleet, so the car and the transport fleet in Brazil runs on biofuel, or many cars have so-called hybrid engines where they can run both on petrol and biofuel. So Brazil comes with a legacy of clean energy, but then again, biofuel is also controversial because of the land uses, the land implications, right? If you're using land to produce biofuel instead of food. And certainly nowadays, there are other initiatives. So as you said, rightly, green hydrogen is a hype. But when it comes to green hydrogen specifically, a lot of the investments are about exporting green hydrogen to Europe rather than internal use. And that's problematic because basically green hydrogen is a form of bottling renewables. So basically it's a form of storing wind energy or solar energy and shipping it to Europe or to the US.
Yeah, and almost like a LNG style. Basically, bottling the natural gas and then shipping it to... In a way.
One could say that. And just to finish my thought here, so I visited some of the communities in Brazil where there are plants for green hydrogen, and many of these communities, they face blackouts. So they are sitting close to a windmill, which... Mm-hmm. which is supposed to produce electricity energy for the production of green hydrogen. But then again, they have no electricity. So that it could be seen as one of the consequences and problems with so-called renewable energy.
Good that you move that experience and observation as well, because recently Eric Cessna did an intensive field trip in Brazil, especially in Amazon, regarding the green energy and overall the developments there because of his postdoc study. So, Eric, more broadly, so you already mentioned briefly that there are some blackouts, that the transition also, or the planning is also not going smoothly. What have you discovered and what are your observations for our listeners? What's going on and what have you found out during your field trip regarding the green energy plans or hydrogen hype? Or is it a hype or actually is it a real development? So,
thanks for the question. So first, a little bit of context to our listeners. So as Aga, our host, described, I did a recent field trip to Brazil and I was looking at two different issues. So one, looking at green hydrogen developments and the other looking at road projects in the Amazon. So first on green hydrogen developments, as you said, there's a hype. Especially in developing countries, so the green hydrogen is promoted by major financial organizations such as the World Bank. So as a solution for developing countries, because essentially they can become exporters of energy, and that plays well also vis-a-vis the current situation in Europe, right, with the Russian invasion in Ukraine, the need to diversify the energy matrix. So in many ways, the green hydrogen is portrayed as this sort of holy grail. Mm-hmm. But as I said in my other response, it comes with a huge range of social implications, not least for the communities surrounding project areas, especially many countries from Asia to Africa. They face energy deficits. So it poses the question, so why a lot of countries are putting forward agendas for green hydrogen, especially for the export of green hydrogen, without resolving their internal problems in terms of energy sufficiency, so on and so forth. So that's also a question which is very valid for the Brazilian reality. Important also to note that a lot of these are recent developments, so a lot of the projects are in the planning phase or are in the prospecting stage. It will take a few years until we can see for ourselves the real implications, but nevertheless, our job as researchers is also to anticipate and eventually be part of such debates.
Yeah, and during that field trip, as you said, you observed the road projects as well, and then the hydrogen projects as well. What type of, if I may ask, without mentioning name, contacts you had? Did you have a contact with the locals, companies? Could you maybe reflect on these different views if you met with them? So what are their opinion on these developments?
That's a great question to reflect on the road project. Because as you know, roads, they embody a wide range of things. They embody perceptions of connectivity, of modernity, of development, of integration, especially in the Amazon. So in light of, as mentioned, Bolsonaro's ambition to integrate the Amazon, which, you know, has its roots in Brazil's military regime. So back in the day, so most of the roads in the Amazon were constructed or were developed by the military regime with this aim of occupy, as they said, in order not to hand over. So this idea that we should exercise our sovereignty in the Amazon. But when you look at deforestation in the Amazon and where deforestation is located, where forest fires are located, they are usually surrounding a major road. So the development of roads in the Amazon is intrinsically connected with deforestation.
Deforestation.
So in terms of stakeholders,
kind of burning the Amazon to create maybe a road, sounds like almost.
No, usually the the development of a road leads to deforestation because it increases access. So once you have access, especially to remote areas, then you bring migrants, you bring
also
illegal miners, you bring farmers who are interested in clearing land.
Exploiting,
For a wide range of reasons. You bring crime, you bring all sorts of problems to sensitive global ecosystems such as the Amazon. So just to finish, my fieldwork in that regard was gauging the different perceptions, because of course people in the cities, they associate roads with faster connectivity. Farmers, they want to expand their land, but on the other hand, academics, environmentalists, they criticize road developments because in many ways they perceive that as beginning of the end for Amazon.
And how about the locals? Did you have a chance to talk to locals, indigenous people, ask their opinion? What do they think? I assume, of course, they are negative because it influenced daily their daily life. What are their opinions? Because you mentioned the farmers, people who live in the city, corporations. How about the indigenous people and their opinion on this?
Yeah, locals is a very broad umbrella, which can include a wide range of stakeholders. Even though some would say that the indigenous populations, they are the real locals because they've been there since Brazil, or even before Brazil was colonized, right? And they are indeed important stakeholders. And Bolsonaro's government has symbolized a huge threat. So the all these ideas of the Amazon, these developmentalist conceptions, the idea that indigenous reserves in Brazil should also be open for mining, exploitation, exploration, economic activities. So all of these developments, they put many of the indigenous populations and their cultures into threat. In my case, doing this fieldwork, because of time issues, I was not able to get to the indigenous reserves because that would also require a different set of permissions. So you cannot go there. You have to apply for a permit to a specific governmental agency. And it was during the elections time when things were even more complicated. And also the safety aspect, right? So during the elections, with all the tensions and someone from outside getting to those locations could be a bit tricky. So personally, I haven't visited any indigenous communities, but they're nevertheless part of the story, an important part of the story about road development in the Amazon, because they are the ones perhaps that will be affected the most. Because once you have road, then again, you create access to otherwise remote areas, access to indigenous reserves. And just to highlight with a recent development in Brazil, there's an indigenous a group called Yanomami. And I don't know if you had the chance to see, there were pictures emerging. Many of those indigenous, they were undernourished. They were really slim, which highlights the lack of attention by the previous Bolsonaro administration to these indigenous populations. And this area where Yanomami live, it's surrounded by illegal mining. So there are all sorts of health harms that affected as well their daily practices. So that's an illustration of what development or of what infrastructure or the arrival of illegal mining means for these, the indigenous people. Populations.
Very interesting and also very useful to know this. And hopefully the new administration will take less, let's say, damaging policies towards Amazon, towards indigenous people, and more maybe on sustainability. Of course, the term sustainability is itself also a bit complicated regarding the definition. But at least, hopefully, we will see less right-wing policies, more compromise, more cooperation, and also more development, equal development and equity from the new administration. Well, Eric, I want to thank you for this interesting debate. Unfortunately, because of the time limit, I will stop you here, but we'll invite you next time when you have your findings, maybe regarding further findings regarding the developments in Amazon, or maybe you can analyze in the future with us the Meet Lula government, what has been changed or what hasn't been changed, then it will be also great to our listeners. Well, thank you so much, Eric. It was a great pleasure to having you today. Yes, thank you very much for listening to us. Please follow us all the social media and stay tuned. Thanks a lot.
Great pleasure being here and looking forward to the next conversation.